Hello and welcome to this week's Liverpool Live podcast. I'm Camelia Narani and I'll be discussing the main news stories in Liverpool, plus a roundup of the latest sports headlines and what's happening in the city this week. Coming up, Liverpool City Council have axed their plans to shut the 11 libraries. We speak to the Mayor himself, Joe Anderson, about the future of the libraries.
Well, there's some libraries that will remain open full time because they will be working with agencies, but some libraries we will maybe have to, instead of open 5 days a week or 6 days a week, we'll have to reduce them by a day.
Also, we'll be finding out why this man believes if Labour are elected next year, it could persuade more voters to change to UKIP.
In the end, if you get a Miliband government, people will realise that this guy's got absolutely nothing in common with them.
As well as that, we'll be hearing from this charity.
A lot of our families, they struggle all year round. Christmas, we think they should get something special.
Probably one of the most talked about topics this week in Liverpool. Many of you may be pleased to hear Liverpool's mayor has revealed the council have axed plans to shut 11 Liverpool libraries. Liverpool City Council have identified more than £1.6 million in savings, meaning only £600,000 more needs to be found. 11 of the city's 19 libraries were threatened with closure in an attempt to save about £2.5 million a year from its budget in the wake of government cuts. Liverpool Life reporter Hannah Kane spoke to Mayor Joe Anderson about the decision to save the libraries and the direction they are going for in the future.
For months now, the team of officers here at the council and Wendy Simon, my cabinet member, have been talking to agencies and the voluntary sector and different people who are going to work with us in seven of the libraries, the 11 libraries that we were consulting on. And the savings is accumulates to round about £1.7 million, which leaves us with around about £800,000 to find. Agencies are going to move into some of our libraries. We're going to put some of our one-stop into libraries as well, and that's going to save money.
One idea suggested was to use the libraries as police stations. Is that something Liverpool City Council will consider?
Yeah, the City Council is trying to make savings in the police budget, so we're open to all suggestions like that that enables the police and the city to make joint savings together. So of course we will be up to that, and if it's possible to do that, then we will.
What would the libraries be used for? Will the opening times be changed?
Well, there's some libraries that will remain open full time because they will be working with agencies, but some libraries we will maybe have to, instead of open 5 days a week or 6 days a week, we'll have to reduce them by a day. There won't be any compulsory redundancies.
There's been a lot of protests around this area. Do you think there is enough people in Liverpool that go to libraries that justifies saving the 11?
Well, it is about a community and a community resource. People need to understand and realise that lots of people in the city of Liverpool don't value the libraries as much as others do, and they value, for instance, children's centres or other services that we're going to have to reduce and cut. And I've got to try and find the happy medium. What I've said is that if we can make savings in the library service, and that's what we've done so far, we've made around about £1.7 million worth of savings, then we'll keep them open and protect them, and that's what we're doing.
How hard are you finding it as the Mayor of Liverpool to make these decisions?
Really hard, really hard. I mean, every single day, you know, we have to make tough choices and tough decisions.
There has been criticism using your decision to save the libraries as you bowing down. What would you say to them? How would you react?
Rubbish. That's rubbish. I mean, you know, there'll be people who claim credit. There'll be people saying that it's a U-turn. There'll be people saying that I should do it and we should carry on cutting the library services. Look, you know, the fact of the matter is we've reduced the costs of running the library service by about £1.7 million. We still will be spending £10 million on the library service. And the fact of the matter is that I recognise that, you know, there's a call on all of our services. I also know that people will be saying to me, you shouldn't be spending money on libraries and you should be spending them on children's centres.
How do you think you are dealing with the decisions?
Well, in the best way we can. You know, as I said, I make no excuses for the tough decisions that we've got to take. We've got no choice. You know, the only option in the situation that we find ourselves in is to, you know, set an illegal budget or carry on in the way that we are doing, pragmatically and realistically, understanding the needs of the city.
That was our reporter Hannah Kane talking to Mayor Anderson about the decision to save the libraries. Despite the mayor's announcement that the libraries will be saved, Sue Ferguson from the organisation Liverpool Against the Cuts told us how, although she's happy with the news of the libraries, she's still wary of their future.
We are pleased with the announcement that 11 libraries will not be closing their doors, you know, and who wouldn't be pleased with that? So that's great. We haven't seen the report that Jo Anderson has seen. Would have been nice to have had a sight of that report. If libraries are going to be run by volunteers, that's not sustainable. So that's not guaranteeing that libraries will stay open in the long term. So we welcome the fact that they're not going to be closing the doors immediately. This is pressure from Liverpool people who know the value of their community life and queued to sign a petition, queued in the rain sometimes to sign a petition because they wanted to save their lives. So I hope that the mayor has listened to that and acknowledged that. We have collected together 20,000 signatures, which is quite unprecedented, really. I hope he has listened to reason. Then it's a question of looking at how we keep our libraries and develop our libraries. We would like the council to challenge the government on the cuts they've made.
Liverpool Adelphi Hotel profits have increased by 20% in the last financial year, despite the group being rated the worst chain in the country. The iconic Liverpool Hotel turned over £9 million over the last year, earning £900,000 profit. The hotel's owner, Britannia, was voted worst hotel chain in a survey by Which magazine. The Adelphi, which was subject of a fly-on-the-wall documentary for Channel 4, was Harold Wilson's residence on election night during the 1960s and 70s. UKIP deputy leader Paul Nuttall believes Liverpool will be tough to crack ahead of the general election in May 2015. Speaking at UKIP's North West Conference, the MEP said he thought 13 years of mismanagement from Tony Blair may have pushed the city's voters in another direction. Our reporter Luke Holliday has been following the story.
The UKIP election train seems to be reaching top gear, heading towards next year's general vote. However, it seems the people of Liverpool have yet to get on board. 2014 has so far been a successful year for the party, with victory in the European election, and in Douglas Carswell they have their first elected MP in the Houses of Parliament. I spoke to Paul Nuttall about how he envisages UKIP's profile growing in the city of Liverpool.
Well, I think it's going to happen. I think what's going to happen is generally people will eventually come over to UKIP in Liverpool, more slowly than most other places, because in the end, if you get a Miliband government, people will realise that this guy's got absolutely nothing in common with them. You know, he's never had a proper job in his life. You know, he represents the attitudes of right-on liberal metropolitan North London and not the attitudes of people in Liverpool. I mean, I couldn't really see Ed Miliband settling down to a nice pint of mild in a Liverpool working man's club, could you? Nor could I see Chuck Ramuna or many other of the Labour front bench. And look, you know, the problem with this city is that far too many people, whether we like it or not, still think it's 1984 and not 2014.
The landscape of Liverpool politics is dominated by Labour and has been for years. They hold all of the 5 seats that Liverpool has in Parliament, and the city's directly elected mayor, Jo Anderson, is also from the Labour Party. Bootle-born Paul Nuttall believes that Labour politicians continuously remind people of the days of Margaret Thatcher's Conservative government as an intentional strategy to get themselves re-elected.
You know, we're not fighting Thatcherism anymore. She hasn't been Prime Minister for 25 years. In fact, she's been dead over a year. But what happens is that the Labour Party in this city generally sort of perpetuate this feeling that somehow we're still fighting Thatcherism when we're not, because it keeps them in their seats.
Much of UKIP's support has been built on their policy that Britain should be out of the European Union, and in particular their policy to crack down on immigration into the country. According to the official 2011 census in Liverpool, the amount of people who class themselves as white British and Irish is 86.2%. UKIP's deputy leader believes that crime and immigration are some of the major issues facing people in Liverpool and people across the country.
Well, do you know what? It's not just about the people of Liverpool in particular. It's about everyone in the country. And everyone feels the same. And the issues out there, of course, are crime, especially in places, you know, especially in cities. You know, we want to ensure that people feel safe when they go out of an evening. Immigration is obviously another concern, because in cities and big urban areas you have wage you have people's wages going down, and in some cases, I mean, you just have to look at things like Delta Taxis, which I think now is the second biggest taxi firm in Europe. You know, there's lads there who are trained brickies and trained plumbers and all the rest of it, who are driving cabs because they've been driven off-site because they've been undercut as a result of mass immigration.
As next year's general election approaches, it remains to be seen whether the growing support UKIP have received around England will be reflected in Liverpool voting.
That was our reporter Luke Holliday talking to UKIP's deputy leader Paul Nuttall about the party's profile in Liverpool.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, bookmark jmu-journalism.org.uk.
The Prime Minister and Chancellor of the Exchequer have welcomed plans from Aldi to create 35,000 new jobs over the next 8 years. Liverpool Life reporter Lewis Meller has more.
The investment will see Aldi more than double its current employment rate as it plans to open 550 new stores over the next 8 years. This includes plans which would see between 600 and 1,000 new apprentices each year. The apprenticeship training and development will be supported by the new Apprenticeship Academy located at Aldi's offices and distribution centre in Bolton, which is due to open in March 2015. Aldi says that it will invest £600 million in the expansion project. Although there is no news yet as to whether the plans will include Merseyside, the discount supermarket currently has 15 stores in and around Liverpool. It follows news which came in September that the supermarket is to recruit more than 275 staff over the next 18 months as it aims to expand its Merseyside reach.
A Liverpool charity has launched a Christmas appeal to support thousands of disadvantaged children across the region. Kind, based in the city centre, helped children and families last year by providing festive hampers, working alongside the likes of schools and community groups. The appeal is now in its 39th year, with volunteers helping to pack and deliver hampers right up to Christmas Eve. Our reporter Bethan Tolley spoke to Stephen Yip, the charity's director, who says that he's hoping this year will be a success.
Christmas appeal has been going since 1975. It's always reached its target, and over those years it's helped tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of disadvantaged and unlucky children and families from within our local community of first Liverpool and now Merseyside. So it's always been very successful.
Who do you work with alongside your Christmas campaign?
Last year we had about 39 partners who had referred families for help at Christmas, and they range from schools, social work, probation, community groups, women's aid. It's the whole range of organisations that deal with children and families in need within our community.
And how many children and families are you hoping to help this Christmas?
Well, last year we helped just over 7,000. If the appeal goes as well, it will be the same number. But the appeal has no budget. That means that we will spend what we raise. Last year it was over £50,000 we raised, and we spent over £50,000. So ours is a true Christmas appeal.
And how exactly are you actually helping them this winter?
We provide large family-sized food hampers, which contain over 65 items. Some stock items such as beans, spaghetti, soups, but also some luxuries like mince pies, Christmas pudding, Christmas crackers. There's a fruit basket as well. The aim is to give our families a quality hamper, something that, you know, we would want to take ourselves, because for a lot of our families, they struggle all year round. They buy basics, they buy the cheapest brand. So at Christmas, we think they should get something special. And as I say, there's enough food in that really to last a week.
And how can people get involved and donate to your Christmas appeal?
They can look at our website, which is www.kind.org.uk. They can become our friend on Facebook, and they'll get all the updates. Or they can come into our office, which is 19 Back Canning Street, Liverpool, L8 7PB, and drop a donation in. Or they can ring us on 0151 708 8273, and they can either help practically, because we pack these hampers ourselves. Although I do have to stress, you know, a lot of people do like to help packing the hampers, but we can only pack hampers if we can raise the money to buy the food to put in the hampers.
That was our reporter Bethan Tolley speaking to Kind charity director Stephen Yip about how they will be helping thousands of families this Christmas. A woman will be seen using an e-cigarette on TV as advertising rules dating back to 1965 have been updated. It will be the first time adverts showing e-cigarettes being inhaled have aired. Liverpool Life reporter Dan O'Brien looks at the controversy.
The advert will begin to air this week and will show a woman inhaling the vapour from an electronic cigarette. The advert has already been met with controversy from campaigners saying it glorifies smoking and may lead to an increase in children taking up the habit. But Simon Clark, director of the pro-smoking group Forest, told us he welcomes the change in the law but stresses the need for further regulation.
The anti-smoking group ASH, they've done a fair bit of research in this area. And according to their research, there's no evidence that non-smokers are turning to e-cigarettes, and there's no real evidence that children are using e-cigarettes in any significant number. I mean, clearly there need to be some regulations, and we wouldn't object if they said, look, you know, if you're under 18, you can't buy e-cigarettes. That seems perfectly reasonable because I think, like tobacco, all these products should come with a sort of warning.
The advert will begin broadcasting this week, post Watershed, and will run for 5 weeks. Let's hope it's not a return to the way cigarettes were advertised back in the 1960s on British television, like this.
Hundreds of these can't see tests have proved that 2 out of every 3 smokers prefer the flavour of Churchman's Tip. Why? Specially blended tobaccos, plus a tip that lets the flavour through. Try them yourself. 2 to 1, you'll prefer them too. Churchman's Tipped, the tipped cigarette you can really taste.
This is Dan O'Brien reporting for Liverpool Life.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, follow us on Twitter at JMU Journalism and come back often.
The Pope has appointed a Liverpool-born Archbishop as the Vatican's Foreign Minister. Paul Gallagher is the first Briton to serve as Secretary for Relations with States. Our reporter Ben Matthews has more.
The role means the Archbishop is effectively third in line for papal appointment, as the seat is often seen as a route to higher responsibility within the Catholic Church. The 60-year-old father had previously been working in areas of crisis, such as Guatemala and Burundi, before taking this Vatican role. Paul grew up in Fazakerley before beginning his clerical career as assistant to the parish priest at the Holy Name Church in the same Liverpool region. Being fluent in Spanish, French and Italian, Gallagher is said to be perfectly suited for the foreign relations role.
And now for our latest weekly sports headlines with Ruby Molyneux.
The second round of the FA Cup has been drawn. Tranmere will play away at Oxford United after Mickey Adams' side beat Bristol Rovers to secure their place in the second round. Chester have been drawn away at Barnsley and Southport will play Eastleigh at home if they can beat Dagenham and Redbridge in their first round replay. Non-league side Warrington Town will now face Gateshead away after Warrington stunned League 2 side Exeter 1-0 to get through to the next round. I speak to Warrington Town chairman Toby McCormack. How do you feel about being drawn against the conference side Gateshead?
It's a really tough draw. To be honest, it could have been worse. It could have been, I suppose, like a Colchester, or, you know, it could have even been a Maidstone away or something like that. So that is it a tough draw? Absolutely. Even sort of from a financial aspect, in Gateshead Stadium, the fans aren't close to the pitch. It's got an athletics track round it. It's a tough away day, but I suppose we have to look at the possibility of the draw and bringing it back to our place on a Tuesday night.
You are playing away. Are the players and managers ready for the game?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what we do last night is sort of, and it's really difficult, I mean, we have to sort of cap the enthusiasm, because before that FA Cup game, we've of course got 4 league games and 2 other cup matches. So sort of with the league, you know, sort of really being the priority, we've got to focus on these next 4 league games.
So what preparation will be taking place before the FA Cup game?
Well, we've been offered Finch Farm by Everton again, which we'll use in the week up to run up to the Cup. Maybe just do something a little bit different on the Thursday before training, but being offered sort of local restaurants to use by potential new sponsors and local businesses. Everyone's getting involved in the build-up to it, so we will do something a little bit different in the run-up to the game.
Are you thinking about the possibility of playing a Premiership side if you win against Gateshead?
I'm sure that's going to be the manager's team talk at Gateshead. You know, we literally are 90 minutes away from the possibility of drawing a Premiership side.
How financially rewarding has this been for your club?
It's been really good. You know, it's going to be something that's going to sustain the club for the next, you know, good 2 or 3 seasons to come. And we're looking at using money to build the community and charity side of the club, looking at making, probably building a community hub, but strengthening the foundations of the businesses, really.
There's been such a big community atmosphere. Everyone has been getting behind you. Are you feeling that now?
You know, social networking was off the scale. We're asking us, are we putting coaches on, and how many supporters are going to Gateshead? That in itself is a showing of a real community step change for the club.
And in basketball news, Liverpool Basketball Club now progress on to the quarter-finals of the National Shield in December after beating Sefton Stars in a dramatic derby. Liverpool's opponent in the Shield is not known until all round three games are played. Karen Billington, secretary of Liverpool Basketball Club, tells us more about the club's success.
The players have worked really hard. We've actually, as I say, got through to the quarterfinals. Things are looking good. They've not lost a game yet. So we're looking really positive now and getting to the final. We had a really, really good season last year. They won the North Division 4. They won the Division 4 playoff finals. Our coach got the Coach of the Year award. Didn't lose a game last year at all. Promotion to Division 3, and they haven't lost a game yet. Got a couple of tough games coming up over the before Christmas. One particular game with Nottingham, they've not lost a game either, so that's going to be a really good game when we get around to meeting them.
I'm Ruby Molyneux, and that's your sports roundup for this week.
So what's on in Liverpool this week? Acoustic Roots duo Show of Hands brings their music to St George's Hall this weekend. Celebrating a 22-year partnership, the couple have sold out the Royal Albert Hall four times and are triple winners at the BBC Radio 2 Folk Awards. You won't want to miss a chance to see the band locally, as it's their first visit and their only tour of the year. Doors will open at 7:30pm and tickets cost around £22.50. And for all art lovers, Titanic in Liverpool, the Untold Story exhibition reopens at the Maritime Museum this weekend. It marks the anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic and explores Liverpool's central role in the Titanic story. It will feature previously unseen collections of international significance, and you'll be pleased to know it's free entry. It's been quite wet and chilly in Liverpool this week. Highest temperature, 12 degrees Celsius. That's the latest news from us. This is Liverpool Life Podcast. Don't forget to tune in next week for your latest news headlines. A special thanks to this week's editor, Elna Finn. I'm Chameleon Irani. Thank you for listening.
This has been the Liverpool Life Podcast, brought to you by the journalism students at the Redmond's News Centre. More next week.